Hello and welcome everyone to a mystical journey to the Sacred Sites Global Summit, where we will journey to beautiful sacred sites with healers, shamans, scientists, doctors, wisdom keepers, and coaches to gain wisdom and healing to self, the collective, and our divine Mother Earth. During the course of this event, you will learn that a sacred site is not only an external place or structure, but also our own body. You may have heard of the term, your body is a temple. Therefore, we will also journey inwards to access our internal sacred sites, for example, our sacred heart. You will hear experts talk about their own healing journeys and the work they're doing to raise awareness and consciousness of individuals, the collective, as well as raising the vibrations of our great spiritual mother, Gaia, to create more joy, peace, and abundance for all sentient beings on our beautiful and divine planet, our home. I'm your host and the creator of this event, Ami Sohi. And before we begin, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Jocelyn Starfeather for her tremendous mentorship and guidance during the creation of this summit, without whom I would not be able to present today. I am also very grateful to all my family and friends for their unconditional love and support throughout my journey. And last but not least, I'm very grateful to all of you for taking the time and having the courage to be here today. So thank you. Without further ado, I'm very excited and thrilled to present Keegan Meader. Keegan grew up in California with a family that built homes and moved a lot. And when he reached his full height, the amount of movement in his life kept growing. After school, he traveled to China for a quarter at a Shaolin Kung Fu school and another quarter traveling across Asia. College could only keep him in for a year before escaping to a bike tour of Europe, where he discovered his life's calling in permaculture and began an 11-year career of work stays on organic farms and a variety of eco projects around the world. He used his class privilege to learn all he could about how people from different regions and realities are able to live in union with Mother Earth. His plan to pursue a degree in linguistics transformed into a learning journey in the healing arts, which started with massage and led to experiences with many traditions around an energetic approach to holistic health, both on the individual and community or environmental levels. He learned to practice radical acceptance of what is while paradoxically obsessing over visions for a better world and began to identify as an actionist rather than simply an activist for community building and positive change. He explored several countries on four continents, enjoyed either delving or dabbling in learning local languages along the way. And since 2020, has expanded his passion for communication into a study of law with the intention of helping himself and others to become free. So Kevin's topic for today is sacred sites at holy homes, creating permaculture paradise around the planet. Welcome, Keegan, for this, on this beautiful, this sacred space. And it's an honor and pleasure to have you here with us today. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's a real pleasure. So, Keegan, what's your perspective about what makes a sacred site?
It's a different connection that we each have, right? I mean, we all have our own sense of what it is that's sacred to us. And we have different ways to define it, but it's for me, it's the feeling. I would equate it with just connection with the divine and a place that is, and I don't know, yeah, like I say, there's different perspectives. It's like some people would say that sacred is like set aside from the mundane, but my intention to share here with this talk together is kind of like seeing the sacred in the mundane, because every moment is a sacred moment, and every bit of land is a holy land, and every drop of water is a holy water, to quote a song from Michael Franti. So Yeah, that's, I mean, it's sacred is divine, and that's part of the tree of life, which is throughout all of creation. You know, the divine is everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere and within us as well. Yeah, it's true. So what kinds of experiences have you had at sacred sites, you know, where people live? Can you share that with us, your stories?
Sure. Well, okay. Right now I'm in Europe. I've come kind of full circle in the last 11 years of finding out about work trade networks. The first one I found out about was called HelpX. And there's WOOF, which is Willing Workers on Organic Farms. And it was in 2012. I was bicycling with my brother through Europe, and yeah, decided to try some, you know, work trade volunteer through the HelpX network, and that was in Croatia. It was my first work trade on the little peninsula of Istria, and it's really like amazing to see just the stone. To me, it's like that's a great marker and signifier of the sacredness of a place is as in Native American people call it, the stone people that are there, because they're just beautiful, especially in this area where I've just gone through Croatia again. Like I said, I've come full circle, and now I'm in Bosnia. But there's just like an amazing amount of beautiful stone that the people have used to build their villages, and they're just around in the mountains. And it's really special to see the relationship that we have with the stone from the earth, and how we build, like, make these beautiful dwellings and make our sacred homes where we have our sacred space inside. And just these stones hold vibrations, and they communicate with us, and we have an ongoing relationship. We're learning from one another. And so that's a good place to start for sure. Like the foundation of seeing like the stone here, the beauty. And yeah, I mean, if you haven't traveled in Europe, like it's something that really strikes you, as opposed to like a lot of places like where I come from, like on the West Coast of the United States. You don't see everyone, you know, the houses are built from wood and they call it drywall, which is like, also they also call it sheetrock. It's like a, you know, man-made stone kind of substance that's like not the same as what's coming from nature. And it's beautiful to see all the amount of just stone that's everywhere here. And I'm reveling in the awe of that now. I'm traveling with a friend, and she took me to this big canyon that was a previous, I mean, and there's a big dam construction, but it's just like an amazing canyon. And I mean, that's the reason we were able to go down it, because they had made like a trail down into through these amazing stones. And it's unbelievable the beauty of the stone here on Earth. So that's a big part of the magical experiences I have, like, and creating them too. You know, I have a passion for doing the stone work, and my grandmother my family's land in Southern California, making stone walls around some, like, we planted some pine trees in the desert, and we made little stone walls, and just like you know, like it's like communication with the stone of how to put it together with the other stones to make a wall is really it's just a beautiful experience. And then the finished product creates a beautiful setting, beautiful space. There's so much to be said about all the stone work in the various gardens that I've visited around the world. It's really a beautiful thing.
So yeah, like you said, it's you know, every place is sacred. Even our backyard, our garden can be sacred, you know, just having this communication with the stones, with the plants. We can learn from each other, help each other. So it's not just that we want to always receive from nature, you know, we also you know, nature's asking us also to take action and give back. Yeah. So you got involved with all these eco projects, right, around Europe and into permaculture kind of a way of doing things. Can you explain to the audience how you got involved and what is this permaculture that the eco villages that you're helping create?
Yes, I would love to. So permaculture is like coming from the words permanent and agriculture, although I really kind of in my mind, and a lot of people have too, expanded the definition to be permanent and culture combined, because it's really more all-encompassing than just with agriculture. It's a, you know, it's a design science, a design process, and it's built on three ethics, which is care for the earth, care for the people, and fair share, meaning equitable distribution of goods and services, and and spaces, and then it has principles. It has original 12 foundational principles, and then people have added more principles over the years as it's grown and evolved. But it's about asking the question, like, how can humankind be a positive influence on the environment, and like meet all of our needs and live the life that we want to live, that without creating destruction and detracting from nature, as a our society has grown to be a systematic extractive economy. And so, yeah, the permaculture asks the question of, like, how can I basically have a relationship that's positive, not only for me, but for the environment, to create more abundance and more diversity, and therefore more stability in the ecosystem. And it began my experience with it, like I said, in Eastern Europe, in Croatia. I went to a volunteer opportunity at a Dutch family's home, a place called Bogota Šuma, which is like in the north central area of Croatia. And there was a Chilean woman there that told me about permaculture for the first time. And yeah, now I'm excited. I'm going to be going back to that place. And they've been growing and evolving. I helped them start their permaculture food forest in 2012. And they've been like growing and evolving as permaculture facilitators, and as a, with the land there, growing more gardens and making, we made elderflower wine, and, they've been experimenting with different, brewing techniques, and also with the local culture there. There's a strong, brewing, they make this stuff called rakia, which is from, different fruits, and I think a lot they make from like plums, and I think they make it from different kinds of fruits, but it's a strong alcohol. And they've been growing and evolving, and I'm excited to go back there soon. And when I found out about permaculture there in 2012, I read they had a book called The One Straw Revolution by Masanobu Fukuoka, which is really an amazing book, not only to describe his do-nothing agriculture, as he called it, which is, he figured out a way to, instead of just like growing rice and then having that be a dedicated zone for growing rice, is growing rice and I think barley and, other things together. He started with his father's orchard, and then he was kind of letting nature do the work, finding ways to design the timing and the methods he did planting with, so that they didn't have to till. It was all about not disturbing the soil by tilling. And so I think that was some of the origins of like the whole no-till agriculture that we find today. People are considering the destructive tendency that it has to be tilling a plot of land repeatedly, because the main important thing to do in agriculture is to cultivate a healthy soil environment, so that there's lots of microbes that are in balance with the, and like diverse community of microbes in the soil. that have positive interactions with the plants and with the fungi and everything. So I love that book, not only just as agriculture, but as philosophy in general. Like things that the author said is he thinks 100% of the people in the world should be farmers. And, ideally that's like, we should all have this connection of seeing where food comes from, whatever scale it's on, whether you have potted plants on your balcony or, you just grow some herbs inside your kitchen. It's important that we have this connection and understanding, because it is a sacred process that we draw sustenance from the earth, and how can we go on sustaining this process of sustaining ourselves by creating reciprocal relationships to where we are offering equal consideration to the earth, so that we can go on and all her life can go on, because we all do depend on one another. So basically, I read that book and I got interested, and I was looking around to take a permaculture design course, which is what most people, do to get involved with permaculture. There's a 72-hour curriculum for a permaculture design course, and I wasn't really finding it in Europe at that time. I was looking in Italy, because I had been staying in Italy and studying Italian, just because that's something I was interested in, mm-hmm. and I wanted to continue doing that, but I couldn't really find the course or the there's an amazing community in Northern Italy that's called Domenhur, and I was considering that, but I had this warnings from various people like, oh, don't go there because it's like a cult, and there is a lot of this sentiment that goes around from like community building, and there are also communities that you don't want to really get involved with, because they have this cult aspect where like people are giving away their personal power to somebody that they idealize or idolize. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case at Domenhur, but at the time, people had been telling me, oh, don't get involved with that. Don't go there. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't. So anyway, I ended up, of all places, I ended up taking a permaculture design course down in Costa Rica, and then I volunteered on that farm for 6 months. It's an amazing place called Punta Mona, on the Caribbean side of Costa Rica, and yeah, it was really beautiful. Like I tell people, like I could be there. I was there for like 6 months, and like I felt like I saw a new type of animal like every single day. Like the amount of biodiversity there, it's just unbelievable, like all these snakes and different kinds of mammals, and especially insects and like big iguanas and sloths, and like, yeah, it's and the amazing tropical plants there. Stephen Brooks, the founder, has this amazing collection of medicinal plants and tropical fruit trees. That's his main passion, is the tropical fruit trees. So that was the beginning of my permaculture journey, and it's been many adventures since then, including two like permaculture action tours along the West Coast, and going down to South America and Peru, and also in Bali and Thailand. I've been to really cool permaculture projects. It's been an amazing adventure.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I know you were also working in Portugal, right? On the eco projects. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about that
sure.
work, that project?
Yeah, the reason I was interested in Portugal was because of one community in particular, which is called Tamera, and it's they say it's one of the oldest eco villages in Europe, and they have a school of love there where they say they teach people how to love without fear, which is, I think, something that we can all continue to learn how to do. And so I was interested in trying and just going there to see what it was like. I didn't end up going there because of money, because it's so established and it's so like reputable, and It's kind of exclusive. Like, even if you want to go volunteer there, you still have to pay a significant amount of money. So that was a barrier for me. But I did go to a place nearby there, which is called A Quinta de Lage. And that's a much younger project, but it's on a really big area of land. And I chose to go there because of holistic management. I've been like, most of my journey in permaculture has been working with plants. And I've been recently, in the last couple of years, trying to get more involved with like animal husbandry, and particularly with biodynamics, and hoping to prepare for creating like a wildlife sanctuary type of thing in the future, or being part of one. And so they have sheep at A Quinta, in this place in Portugal, and it's Alan Savory is this creator of this methodology called holistic management, where it's basically rotational grazing. They're moving the animals across the land so that they don't overgraze, and they continue to provide more fertility, and like the amount of like tilling, like when the animals are moving over the land, they're doing some like disturbance of the soil, so it can have benefits, and then if there's too much, it has detriments. So it's all about finding balance. And it's a really beautiful project, a lot of land, and I felt a lot felt like home because of the environment there, because it's like really similar to California in a lot of ways, with the like rolling hills and grassland and oak trees. As I learned, like, it's not really the way that it is natural for that area. It's a lot of the forests that we have now, like in Europe, are actually like their plantation, things that are designed for human benefit. And this, like, there's a huge cork industry. Portugal is the number one supplier of cork for wine bottles and such in the world. So it's crazy to see like all these beautiful oak trees that have had their bark removed, and that, I feel like, oh no, like, it's hurting the tree to do that, but they find a way to do it every so often, and then they have this amazing material, and they even make hats and pocketbooks and shoes and things out of cork in Portugal, and there's cork floors and things like that. But yeah, I was at this place, and it's amazing. That also, I've seen since I left there, they made a beautiful pizza oven out of earth, like cob, like adobe, clay, sand, straw, and water. I believe is how they created it, and it's like a beautiful sculpture, and I just love that. And then I also was at another project for a month, that in the more northern part of Portugal, and that's a project called Purpose Flow, where we were doing a lot of tree planting, and it was actually again to kind of provide remedy for that specific issue, where all the forests around are just like one or two species. And so we planted all these native plants, native trees, and like 5,000 trees they've been planting over the last like year or 2 years. And so I got to be there to finish kind of the planting of all those trees during the month that I was there, that we kind of planted the last of the supply that they were given by an organization to plant there on the land. And so that's an amazing feeling, to be planting trees, because it's one of the most amazing things that you can do for the environment. Trees have such an amazing array of benefits that I recently learned that in general, trees actually give 70% of the energy of the sugar that they produce from photosynthesis. They actually give to the soil beneath them to be nurturers of, and like parents to the microbes that live in the soil. And so all the life in the soil is sustained and nurtured by trees. And obviously the trees receive benefit in return from helping those microbes to thrive. And then they, as the soil life continues to grow, then the fungal connections to other trees allow it, so trees can be parents to one another. It's that they do share a tremendous amount of nourishment and information through the mycelium networks. And if there's a grove of trees and one of them is deficient in a nutrient because it's not right there in the soil where it's growing, it can get it sent to it from some of the other trees, and they know that about each other. So it's really amazing.
Wow, that is super amazing how they, so much happening like underground, right? They are really cooperating and nurturing each other. And wow, there's so much we can learn from the trees, how they actually cooperate. It's all about cooperation and nurturing, not competition as we humans, have been programmed over years and years, to become very competitive. With each other. Wow, beautiful, beautiful story. So, Keegan, what do you know about the grid connecting sacred sites around the world?
Right. That's another whole communication that's happening around us that a lot of people, they don't realize, they don't know about it. Because like the mycelium, you don't see it, it's under the ground. But also these grids that Earth has, like the meridians in the body, they're sending subtle energies, and people don't realize because the subtle energies are flowing, you don't see them, but that doesn't mean that they're not there. And we do have grids of energy that's like, just like the meridians in the human body. And that's, that's what I've learned through my journey in the healing arts, is like we are like little fractals of the Earth. Like we are so connected. Like not only are we part of her, and what happens on our individual healing journeys is like a reflection of the Earth, and we each like are doing our part and have our specific perspectives as the like thinking and neural language cognitive function of the Earth, because we are all part of the Earth. And so our bodies and our minds and our interactions are all actually Mother Earth, extensions of her experiencing herself as us. But yeah, there's like a natural flow that happens. And I know people who have gone walking along these like channels, and like in Australia, they call them song lines. And they're also called ley lines, places where energy is flowing along the surface of the earth from place to place and distributing, because she, has to have communication throughout her organism. And yes, so it's I'm connected with a lot of from research that I've done online about this, about how there's changing now happening with the whole new paradigm arising and our species becoming more conscious, and the whole Earth going through a process of ascension. We have transformation that's going on. We were talking about before we started recording for this interview how synchronistically I'm here on the Ascension Day at this place, which is where there was an apparition of Mother Mary in Bosnia, and it's called Medjugorje, I think is how you say it. It's kind of hard for me because it's a new language. And I had never heard of this place, and I just synchronistically happened to be going here on the way to the Bosnian pyramids. And yeah, so if you didn't know, there are pyramids in Bosnia, and they're claimed to be possibly the most ancient by the man who discovered them. They look like mountains, and I'm really excited to actually go there in a couple days and see what it's like. But they're submerged in the earth. And a lot of people have been reporting going there and having healing experiences, because the pyramids are a part of this grid of consciousness, and they're like node power spaces where there's a convergence of the ley lines or the song lines. And there's not pyramids on all the convergences. There's many convergences. But there are temples of some sort. A lot of the churches that we see around the world, temples from different traditions are actually constructed by design on these convergences, these power spaces of a convergence of ley lines. And I've read different things about why and how people realize they need to make these constructions there, or where they come from. It's also mysterious about these super ancient structures, and there's a lot of information out there about how Egyptology is there's a lot of confusion and perpetuation of actual false narratives that pyramids were constructed more recently or in with myth, because we don't actually know, we don't have the technology now that they actually used to construct these things. It was something that was coming from an advanced civilization in our ancient history. And they are, I would say, probably part of permaculture, ancient permaculture, where it's whoever was that made these structures as asking themselves the question of how they could be a positive influence. And because to do something that's for nature and for humanity, because we are nature. And I think that's originally where the pyramids, the place that they come from, as far as the intention behind their building. I think they had an effect of facilitating the healthy communication and flowing of the subtle energies around the earth. And people also talk about inner power distribution, like for electricity. That part I don't know as much about it, but I think it's basically coming from an intention of being an uplifting aspect to serve consciousness, to serve evolution. And that's why we see these temples and pyramids. And there's a flip side of that, which is as you can see, a lot of the churches are built on top of sites that were sacred to indigenous people around the world. And then when the Holy Roman Empire came and conquered those people, they wanted to systematically destroy their culture, take them away from their connection, destroy their connection with the earth, and put them into the civitas, or the civil body, as a containment field to control people. Because when we are empowered by this ability, like Fukuoka said, if we're 100% of the people were farmers and they could grow their own food and had that connection, then who are they going to depend on? And that's not what the Roman the Roman conquest, the Roman Catholic Empire wanted. They wanted people that were dependent on them so that they could basically say how life is going to unfold on the earth. And so that's why a lot of churches are built on these old power spots. And they would destroy old temples and then build a church there, or build it right on top. There's a whole extractive nature of that empire and that conquest that we can see, and there's a false, I call it a false grid, of energy that's actually being extracted from us when we go to these places and worship and offer our sacred presence and our offerings and our energy. They're not being channeled to a connection with the earth. They're being channeled to a quagmire of confusion. That's religion is ultimately designed to control people. That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, that's so true, Keegan, what you've just shared with us. Yeah, it's not, I don't, think it was just the Romans. It's been through all the ages, this control and power. Yeah, there's so much about ancient Egypt we don't know, the mysteries, but I feel it's being revealed. The veil is being lifted, and the truth is now being, revealed to us. Because the pyramids are much older, as you said, than we've been told. And then you just mentioned the Bosnian pyramids are much older, one of the most ancient, you said, right, in the world.
Yeah,
So,
purported to be the most ancient.
wow, that, see, yeah, we I was I didn't know that. I was never told that. That's amazing. Now what we're learning, what information is coming through from Mother Earth, from Pachamama to us. Yeah, and then the ascension period, it's there, Pachamama herself is rising and is taking us, the ascension, taking us with her, which is beautiful, I think, what's happening, at this time. And it's a great time to be alive. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. So I know you've been to so many. I mean, like you said, it's just synchronicity that you're in Bosnia today, Ascension Day. And I always feel like we get a place calls us. We get a calling to a place. Do you feel the same, that you have been called to places, not knowing why, and then just because there's information and wisdom for you awaiting there? And when you get to these sacred sites, to the stones, to the forest, to the trees, what messages do you get, for example, from the stones, when you're there at the sacred stones?
I mean, there are people who are, I guess, more evolved or equipped to actually like translate the messages that they received and put them into like words or thoughts that we can talk about. For me, it's something that's very a felt sense of my connection. I'm very kind of empathic, and when I connect with bodies of water and stones and trees that have a lot of water inside them, because it's our emotions are resonating energy within the water, and so I feel that a lot when I'm connecting with the life in these places. And so water is a big part of my felt sense and my guided. And I've been since a young age, I've like fantasized about being able to just travel along rivers, and to connect and just see how they flow and have that great adventure. I've done it in bits and pieces here and there of following these rivers, and it's really amazing. When the time is right, I think I'll be able more to translate my my felt sense and bring through maybe guided messages or things that the stones and the water and the crystals may be telling me. But for now, it's just, it's something that I feel, and I definitely do acknowledge the guidance that comes through through the feelings I have within my body. And people might not understand like how healers or mystics will use like a pendulum or some other method. That's simply a way for us to receive a message from our body. Our bodies are connected, and they have a lot of wisdom within them. And the trick is simply to find a way where we can get that information from our body and into our mind, so that we can think about things and just make decisions. But a lot of times, decisions are kind of made at the level of the body, where people are tapped into their intuition. I feel I do at, in an increasing rate as I learn how to acknowledge that felt sense and how to go with it, and not be distracted by all the thoughts that might be desires that I might might want to go and pursue. Oh, this would be interesting, so I can go there. But if my body's telling me, oh, I should go to this random other place, yeah, so that's happened. And I can say that, yeah, I might have some ideas, but I don't know at the level of the mind where I'm supposed to be. And my body is the one who knows, and so learning how to follow that is important, especially for somebody like me who is kind of, I've been nomadic and traveling and just enjoying the amazing diversity of experience that is available from learning from different cultures and finding the different places, all these sacred places that the earth has to offer and to, yeah, to bless. That's also, I'm also on this journey to be a blessing and to transform myself within and to be a part of the transformation of the whole earth to lift us up into more joyful and more abundant and more connected realities.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's a great way to finish this conversation. Yeah. So maybe all join in unity consciousness, at this this time of the stage of our planet. So that's beautiful what you shared with us. So I know, Keegan, you have a free gift for everyone. So would you like to just say a few words for the audience about your free gift and how they can claim that?
Sure. Yeah, my gift is an invitation to a free webinar and cultural exchange. I'm proposing that we meet online in July, and I have, I have some truth and some inspiration and some guidance to share, and you can learn more about it just going to my website, which is, law of earth, sorry, law of the earth dot space. So it's law of the earth dot space. And yeah, if we go to the announcements there, you can read about my proposed webinar. I have some, it's like a healing experience that I can facilitate to begin. And that's the idea that I want to offer for people, is kind of a journey of healing and reconnection and cultivating this sense of curiosity, of understanding other people's perspectives and growing to expand our horizons, and having a beautiful adventure to really celebrate the diversity that we have amongst us and all the different perspectives. And that's really what makes us whole. We can't, I mean, we are part of a great being, of the Mother Earth, and she is a great part of the great being of the cosmos. And we all have our special perspective to share. And when that sharing does happen, then that's when we reach wholeness. You know what I mean? We are interdependent. So I think we should celebrate that and step into actively finding these perspectives that from others, and making the effort to learn and understand what, like, where people are coming from, and celebrate the different methods of expression that we have, including different languages. And that's a great passion that I have. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's the only way forward, when we all unite, share with each other, and it's all part of the unity consciousness. Yes, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for your time and for sharing all this.
Yeah,
So
thank you so much for the opportunity. And it's amazing to connect you and being with the radical new world building group. And
yeah.
it's a wonder. That's what we need, is a radical new world builders, and let's have more of us.
So for the audience, the link to the free gift and the link to Keegan's website is available beneath the interview. So please go ahead and check out Keegan's website, all the work projects he's doing, and also claim your free gift to that beautiful webinar Keegan is offering everyone. So please do check that out. And Keegan, thank you so much again. And I call you the new age kid of Pachamama. that what you're doing, great work for building this new earth. So thank you for all you do. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my absolute joy. Yes.
Okay. And everyone, thank you for joining, and I wish you a beautiful day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Blessings, everyone.